Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It's been a rough few years for California's wine industry. Sales have shrunk globally as drinking habits continue to change across generations, and that's led to one of the smallest crushes in the last 20 years, according to a new report that was released last week. The preliminary 2026 California Crush Report came out Friday, and no surprise, the crop size is down. So how are industry leaders feeling about it? Many were in Sacramento, actually, for the Unified Wine and Grape Symposium, North America's largest wine trade gathering at the end of January. And Cap Radio's resident wine expert, Rick Cushman, he was also there, of course, and he joins us today to explain what's going on in the industry and how this week's heat wave may have affected vines. Welcome back.
Nice to see you again, Vicky.
Yeah, I feel like you and I, when you've joined us in recent years, it's been a real tough time for the wine industry for a myriad of reasons.
Yeah, I feel like I'm such a downer. And I don't want to be. You know, we talk about this all the time, that wine should be a happy thing. And, you know, and the industry itself sometimes makes it unhappy. We can talk about that, some of the reasons for that, too. But it has been rough times. With this last crush report, we really now have a decent picture of where things are. What it was is actually I looked at the numbers a little more closely, and it was the smallest crush since 1999. And you know, that was there's lots of reasons, and we have talked about that they have taken out vineyards.
Yeah, what is a crush?
So that, you know, it's the harvest. It's the harvest. It's just how many grapes got picked. And this is a report. It's done by the USDA, and what they do is they survey pretty closely. They do that for all, and either California Department of Food and Ag and USDA do it for pretty much every major crop. And California, obviously, wine's a very major crop. There will be a final report out in April 30th, but this is a pretty good estimate. And, you know, it's 2.6 million. But what that means is it's down from even just from last year by what the equivalent of 72 million cases or 864 million bottles of wine, which is a lot. You know, and we've talked in the past about how there was about, and then we've got some real good numbers, and that was coming out of Unified and some other things that, you know, about 40,000 acres were taken out in California, which is, you know, that is a ton of wine. That's the equivalent to about, you know, 24 million cases. Mm. And there's also wine left out in the vineyards, you know, grapes that just weren't picked. And part of those reasons is because there's just no market for it. So what this all means, just in terms of the volume, it's not the worst thing in the world for the industry as a whole, right? Supply and demand, you know, demand is down. Supply now is down. It'll take a year or two, three for that to all catch up because the wine that got picked. And 2024 is a slow year, too, or a small year. But it takes a couple of years for all that to get into bottle and made and, you know, into market or less of it. But if you're a grower or you're a small winery in particular, you're not happy about having less product to sell. And this is always the difficulty in a time like this when some of the major organizations that represent growers and wineries, we're telling them we need to make less wine, but at the same time what you're saying is that you're also limiting what your income is going to be.
Yeah.
And so they're really coming to face where they stand now. How this will play out over the next year or two in terms of volume and demand, well, then you need to build demand, and there are a lot of reasons why that needs to go up.
Hmm. I mean, some may be wondering, why are they leaving grapes on the vine? But there's a continued cost when you actually harvest them,
right,
and make the wine.
Right. It's cheaper to leave them out there than to pick them. You got to pay the crew, you know, then you got to do something with them. So you leave them out there and just get in. Often might just leave those vineyards and not deal with them. And we've talked about this once before, you know, taking out vineyards is expensive because it's taking out any crop. But vineyards, you know, they have, obviously, they've got the trellising systems and they've got the irrigation systems and everything else that goes with it. So it's not like just plowing under your corn and letting it stay fallow for a year or two. Now, you can let your vineyard stay fallow or not attend it, but that's a downside too, because then you can get pests. So you can't just ignore it, because you can get pest problems for the vineyards that you do have. It could spread to your neighbors, which you don't want to do. And so, you know, it either direction you lose as a grower. But it's still cheaper to leave the grapes out there than to harvest and crush them.
And so you were at this symposium of North American growers in January. So this was ahead of that preliminary crush report. But I imagine the crush report wasn't a surprise to people who work in the wine industry. So what conversations were being had at the start of this year about these overarching challenges that they need to overcome as an industry?
That's a great question. And this is... I feel like a broken record sometimes. I come here and say the wine industry just can't get out of its own way. And there are really smart people walking around telling them, look, you guys got to do things differently. You got to talk to younger wine drinkers, younger adults, people who don't drink wine. You know, you got to talk differently about how you talk about wine. You have to be creative. You have to be entertaining. People looking for experiences, right? And there's all kinds of reasons. This price is too high. There's a guy named Rob McMillan, who is probably the number one financer. Silicon Valley Bank finances a lot of wineries in California and in the U.S. And he's, you know, one of the guys who's really most attuned to the industry in terms of costs and in the market. And, you know, he keeps saying wine's too expensive. Price is scaring people off. It's making people buy less. It's also a barrier to entry. And if you think about it, you go to a restaurant. You're not sure what you want. You don't really know much about wine. And you look, and the cheapest glass of wine is $12-$13. Well, it's, you know, and there's a reason for that. You know, it's expensive to carry wine by the glass, although they do make a higher profit on that. Or you can get a beer, which is $8 or $9, or you can get a cocktail, and you know what you want. And you get a cocktail, you can chat them up and tell them how you want it. You don't know what you're getting when you get that glass of wine. And if you buy a bottle, you certainly don't know what you're getting. So it's, you know, it's that sort of thing is frightening. And then there, as you've heard me say this a lot, which is this sort of, you know, toxic gatekeeping where, and they don't even know it, you know, exclusivity has been a business model for a lot of wineries, especially expensive ones, our friends in Napa and Sonoma and some others, where the price itself is a draw because it draws people who think they're getting better wine. Sometimes, often they are. But it's also very, very expensive. So there's partially that, you know, and we are in a time worldwide where economics are still rough. And so you have to accommodate for that. And instead, the industry goes in the opposite direction. They've been really pushing premiumization. Now, some people are learning not to, or what they call premiumization, which is raising prices or really focusing on their expensive wines. But they're also making fun of, and this is the part that drives me nuts, and I hear this a lot. So there was a great example. There was a former wine critic for a major newspaper in the San Francisco Bay Area. Monocle would be a rhyme for the name of the newspaper. Actually, I love their wine writing team now, although one Esther Mobley's just leaving, but there was the critic before them. You know, and this guy said all the time how he didn't want to write about popular wines because he didn't really like them. He makes fun of what they call industrial wines, which is the wines that we all buy in the supermarket, but you can't make an inexpensive bottle of wine if you don't make a lot of it. You know, and he was asked by a wine writer some survey about, like, what should we do? And he says, well, we should make wine more fun. I'm with him. This is the guy, the chief of no fun. He said, we should make wine more fun. And he says, and get people to stop drinking that industrial wine. Well, okay, you're just telling people the wines they have fun with, the wines they buy on Tuesday night.
Well, and that can be a gateway to nicer wines.
Exactly. Yes. And you know, the idea, anything made from grapes that gets fermented is the wine industry. And let's cheer for all that stuff. If they want to pour 7-Up into it, cool. You know, if you want to drink it when it's too buttery or whatever, cool. But they make fun of the wines that are most popular. And it just... the industry just does this over and over. You go into a tasting room in so many places and they'll say, we don't make that crummy buttery Chardonnay. Well, the number one selling kind of wine in America is buttery Chardonnay. So, you know, it's like, look around and be aware. Mm. And they're just not.
If you had it your way, because you've been involved in the wine industry for so long, for decades, what would you do to make wine fun for younger generations or people who haven't drank wine yet?
Well, there are a few people that are out there doing it, including some in our local region. There's a guy I really love. I'm just reading about him. This guy's named Stacy Buchanan. He runs something called Wine and Blood. It's a wine and heavy metal zine. This guy, he toured with bands. He's been paying attention to trends his whole life. And so he loves wine, grew up in Washington wine country. And, you know, he has a magazine that's heavy metal and wine. But so some of it is you've heard me say this before, too, that there's so much of the cursive knowledge of people in the industry, and then they only talk to each other in the industry, like at Unify. They talk to each other, you know, is so get out of it. Go somewhere else and listen and first off and look around, see what people are eating and drinking. You know, I was down at Fisherman's Wharf last weekend for the San Francisco Chronicle's wine competition wine tasting. I was down over the weekend. And the weather was gorgeous, by the way. You know, and I was watching where people were eating. And, you know, all those really nice restaurants, nobody's in them. You know, but there's so many young people in that area, and they're in all kinds of smaller, casual food. And I'm looking at what they're drinking, and most of them have a beer or like a canned cocktail or something like that, the ones that are drinking alcohol. So part of it is get into those places, and you do it with fun wines, and you have fun with it. You know, and if you're in the industry, it's you go walk around Fisherman's Wharf on a warm Saturday and look at what people under 40 are drinking. You know, so that, I mean, that's a big part of it. And don't talk to each other. Talk to people in other industries.
Yeah, maybe drink a little wine while headbanging, you know,
yes.
Or, you know, or in a mosh pit. Why not? The two can come together.
Yes. And so here's the good stuff that is happening, because I don't want to make it sound like nobody has figured this out. I'm not the smartest guy in the industry by any means. I'm not the smartest guy of anything. But that, you know, there are like music festivals. Now they're selling wine. And they're not, you know, they're not saying get it, you know, make sure we have a nice glass. It's like, however we can serve it to you in a solo beer cup. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some wineries that are coming out with 500 milliliter tetra packs, which is 2/3 of a wine bottle that you can stick in your backpack or your purse and take into the movies, you know, or it's not glass. You can sit by the pool with it and you don't have to drink the whole thing. You can reseal it. There's that, you know, there are, like, in our area, actually, the handful of wineries, wine bars that are doing nice things. I can think of a few. We were actually at a poetry reading on Sunday at Parliament, which is an old sack, and it's a wine bar run by Herringer, and they're down in Clarksburg area. Nice folks. They had a poetry reading on a, you know, they have games for kids. It's open. You know, they have other things going on at night. So there's places like Lucid, that is a winery over on R Street. They do the same sort of thing. There's friends of ours. So, I'm prejudiced, but I love what they do. It's called Jonix, and they're on J Street and 23rd. And their place feels like a cafe. You know, you sit all day. Betty down there on T Street, same thing. Feels like you're going in for a snack and a glass of wine. So, you know, it doesn't all need to be barrel tops and, you know, mystique and whispering. Have fun, smile, you know, and ask people what they like. Don't tell them what they should drink. And that's the industry's really hard about that. You go to a bar and get a cocktail, you can get a martini with tequila if you want it, right? You can't get a Cabernet that they don't have, and they'll tell you, and often on the floor in the restaurant, you may not know what to get, so you have to ask for their help. And that's just it's a barrier. So you have to make it and put it out in ways and talk about it in ways that people understand.
Yeah, finally, I mean, you're mentioning when people are figuring this out, I mean, there is the argument, was the wine industry oversaturated?
Yes. Yeah, you know, everything is. I mean, you think about streaming, right? 3, 4, 5 years ago, so many streaming services and everybody's putting out a ton of content so that we will go to Netflix or Prime or whatever. And
it's like
a
choice
lot
paralysis.
Of them have, yeah. And a lot of them have reeled it back. Plus, if you're somebody trying to decide, it's almost like standing in front of a giant wall of wine because what do I watch tonight? You know, and there's no way to figure that out. The wine industry absolutely got oversaturated, and partly because it was growing for two decades, partly because it is enticing. You know, if somebody made a little bit of money, they want to buy a couple acres, you want to, you know, and if you can afford it, you want maybe start a small winery. And if you fall in love with wine, maybe you really make it a career. It's not just not a hobby. But the problem is that was doing fine and people could do what they did because the industry was growing and people were coming to wine. But now part of the problem for the wine business is there's so much else to drink that you know, that you have to be different. You have to be easier, better, more fun.
Competition could be a good thing. Yes. You know, you got to pivot.
Yep. So, absolutely.
Rick, as always, thank you for joining us with a status update on the wine industry.
Always my pleasure. And next time, maybe we'll have better news.
Yes, I hope so. Rick Cushman is our resident wine expert, and he usually joins us just to update us on the wine industry in California. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple or Spotify. You can also send us an email. We're at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Andrew Garcia, Sarit Lashinsky, and editor Jen Picard. Insight's technical director and audio engineer is Mark Jones. Our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.